The area plan for the North and West was defeated by 3 votes in last week's Tynwald sitting. Later on the programme, MLC Paul Crane explains his concern, and even the Treasury Minister acknowledges weaknesses in the process. But first, Chris Thomas, who helped ensure the plan was defeated.
I've got to pay compliment to Mr. Lord Brennan, who's worked with me and others outside Tynwald and with others inside Tynwald for months. Prepared the ground the old-fashioned way of questions, building up an argument, working with people to make sure they understand. And obviously, those involved, me and her particularly, have been up against government's machinery, because what's basically happened is it's there, we have to do something, this is something, we can do it, we lose it if we don't do it now. That whole mechanics, everybody picked off individually. And it's very important that vote went the way it is. And now need to focus on making sure the issues are properly explored. Every issue that was raised by Minister Ashford needs to be properly explored. And then everybody needs to come back, just like he said, and vote as they will in November. Having heard all of the arguments, I told Manx Radio last week that I was minded at that point to move an adjournment. In the end, we've got an adjournment effectively because of the vote. And I said in my speech that we didn't need an adjournment now because people had paid so much attention over the weekend and the public was beginning to notice that the issue was now on the table. So we need a public debate as well as a Tynwald debate, because this matters so much for the future of the island and all of us who live here.
It's returning for a combined vote. I mean, on the face of it, if members stick to their guns, and why would they change? It's going to be 14-17 against the North and West area plan. So what do you think is going to happen in the next month? Because presumably David Ashford wouldn't have called that vote if he didn't think that he could shift a few members' views.
Yeah, and I've hinted at that already in my first answer, so that's the sort of process that's going on. So there are some arguments that Mr. Ashford's made, which is that if we don't have the North and West plan, fields and places at random become available for development. So we've got to actually have experts on that issue pronounce. And I read out what Deemsters has said about it. I quoted the General Policy 3 in the strategic plan. We need to do that. I think what the public's got to...
And that basically is actually, unless it's zoned for residential use, you can't build on it unless there's some exceptional national need circumstance.
It's not even national need, it's rural agriculture workers, there's an existing building there, it's those sorts of limited ones. There's a proposal in the strategic plan to change it for alternative energy, which is being contested at the moment. So that's one of the issues. Another one is that this is preemptive of the strategic plan. If you zone masses of extra hectares, and effectively do things that were not in the strategic plan, which expires in 2026. What's the point of pretending that the strategic plan 2021-2041 is meaningful? So in a way, Mr. Hooper made this point really well. Conceivably, the timing and the government strategy to take this plan, to this North and West area plan, to now was actually what caused it to be lost, if it is ultimately lost, because it is a bit silly from the outside to have a strategic plan to try to persuade people you're taking it seriously if you've already preempted the sorts of things that are going to be debated in it. And that comes down ultimately to the area about what's called conformity. And I quoted Deemsters, and Minister Ashford disagreed effectively with the Deemster, which is a pretty bold decision. So essentially, conformity is about the strategic plan versus the area plan. And essentially, the Attorney General gave advice to the Deemster and also to the court yesterday that he said it's what the independent inspector decides in terms of conformity. I told the court, no, the inspector makes a recommendation to the Cabinet Office, who then adopt a plan that they present to Tynwald, so it's us who decide, and we're the representatives of the people, so the people decide. And the issue that needs deciding is about how much land we zone for houses, given our population plans or targets. So if you read the North West Area Plan Inspector, he talks about a target of 100,000 people. I thought government had even backed away from a target of 100,000 people. I thought it was now just having the infrastructure in case we have 100,000 people. But the North West Area Plan Inspector talks about a target of 100,000 people. That wasn't at the general election. It was a post-election policy. And all that issue is at stake now in the next few weeks.
And presumably, you know, this North and West Area Plan, as Minister Ashford was ably arguing, it replaces plans that are now very outdated. But they've been in place for, you know, certainly tens of years. Yeah. I suppose the argument could reasonably be put that another year, because we're expecting the strategic plan to be back in Tynwald probably around about autumn 2026. So another year to wait for the North and West plan wouldn't make that much difference.
No, it wouldn't. But it would take longer than a year to put a new plan, because this one will fall if the vote goes against it in November. It has to come into force on the 1st of December, or the process has to start again. But I worked with Mrs. Lord Brennan, who'd had advisers helping her come up with an excellent amendment. And the amendment gives primacy to the strategic plan 21-2041, which needs to come back for approval as soon as possible. And fair play to government, they've put that on the table already with consultation. We also respect the North West Area Plan. There's a huge amount of work that's gone into it, a huge amount of contributions, and her amendment explicitly said that we should reconsider the work undertaken in connection with the North and West Area Plan in relation to the All Ireland Area Plan. Mr. Ashford made some sort of cheap points in his summing up, and so nobody could argue with him, about what did we think would be changed in that All-Ireland Area Plan. So nobody could, he wasn't taking intervention, so nobody could say anything. But the simple fact is, we'll be clear on what we're trying to do with the population and how we're going to do it. We'll be clear on our affordable housing strategy. We'll have sorted out the fundamental problems at Quarter Bridge and Braddon Bridge and Governor's Dip in terms of highways. We'll be quite clear on our energy strategy and home heating. There's all sorts of things, infrastructure strategy itself, public service provision, because there was a really daft amendment proposed by Minister Ashford, the motion before, where he tried to persuade Tynwald Court that we would have an integrated review of public service provision and master plans and development briefs all by June 2026, which the court saw through, given that we haven't got all those other fundamental strategies that need to be put in place. So Ms. Lord Brennan's amendment included that, and the All Ireland Area Plan can only come forward after the strategic plan and after those strategies are finalised. And she goes on.
The 100,000, then let's look at that. Presumably, because again, what's clear is some of the reasoning or the mechanism for defeating this motion. What's perhaps less clear to me, to the listener, is what are the fundamental objections to that plan. And I guess that 100,000 target is quite high up there, because that hasn't as yet been tested with the public.
Neither with the public nor inside the planning process. So 100,000 is a political statement that the independent inspector heard as government's target, but government's backed away from that, from its post-election commitment to 100,000. So there's an objective assessment of housing need, which I now keep describing as not objective. It's how many houses do you need if the population grows to 100,000? And also the other major change that troubled Mrs. Maltby first was that we're moving away from brownfield site development, what people like Mr. Dalrymple described as urban regeneration, to urban sprawl, in the words of Mr. Dalrymple and subsequent speakers.
And one of the points I think it was you that made in the debate was that the strategic plan that's currently in place, that I seem to remember came through, was it 2016? Sometime
2016 was updated in 2007 as the first version.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the update in 2016, but that refers to a number of houses needed in the west, and you made the point that since that time the population, if at best has stood still, hasn't really changed. So I think there were 200 houses needed in the north and west, and now that figure's gone up to, well, varying assessments, up for anything up to 700.
And it was me, because I launched the northwest area plan back in 2018-19 in a previous planning reform process, and at that time we planned to finish it in 2019, and at that time the initial assessment was there were already fields that could be zoned for development, that were zoned for development, to provide 200 too many houses, and all of a sudden we need over 1,000 extra houses. It's a bit ambiguous what the number is. So what's changed since between 2018-19 and 2025, and in the population, it hasn't really changed. In fact, 2011 to 2026, the population has been around 84,500. So why all of a sudden are we changing our strategy to zone land, greenfield land primarily, 80% plus greenfield land, to allow for developers to develop cheaply inside the greenfield land rather than to doing the difficult stuff, which is inside urban areas. And the island plan stresses towns first. The strategic plan stresses filling up vacant properties, reusing properties, bringing buildings but basically, it focuses on urban regeneration, however it's called. But in reality, zoning all this greenfield land has the opposite effect.
And I think Paul Crane had mentioned that, particularly in the parishes in the north, that there was a fall in population, according to recent census.
Yeah, exactly. And he also stresses that the average age, I think it is in Bride, is 55 plus now, as it is in the very, very south of the island, not quite that old, but basically Douglas and Jerby are the young places in the island, and the population gets older as you go out. And that's another point that I'll be bringing up today, because I've still got an affordable housing and another transport motion to bring. Essentially, the island plan, the economic strategy, talk about houses for 20 to 40-year-olds. Dr. Allenson, when he was talking, said that people have been moving up to the new estates for the what's termed affordable housing in the north to move into bungalows, which tends to be older people. And in the west, in the first new developments in New Peel, they're not straight Peel Town Commissioner's houses, really. They are technically general purpose housing, but they tend to be let to over 50s. So there's a conflict there between what's in the island plan economic strategy of encouraging house building for 20 to 40 year olds and the reality on the ground, which is building houses for older people. So we need to have a housing strategy as well.
I don't know whether you are a betting man or not, but what do you think the chances are of the north and west area plan going through in the combined vote?
Well, I think there's be a lot of pressure on every individual member, but yesterday Tim Wood showed its best qualities. Every single member of Tim Wood showed their best qualities in a very short...
Well, not every single member, because one was asked to leave the chamber.
OK, and that would be another pressure that's put on people. I noticed that, so I asked for an explanation, and the explanation, I have to go back and hear what Mr. President said on Hansard exactly, but what I remember is there's a perception of a conflict of interest, and I got the idea that must have come from the fact that he seconded the amendment to receive rather than approve the motion, and he described himself as a property developer. Obviously, if it turns out he benefits from his own land, he's clearly personally interested in the outcome of this plan. And if there's anybody else in Tynwald Court who benefits personally directly from this development, they won't be able to vote on that basis. But I'll be asking Mr. Cluett and Mr. President and each of us, and I hereby am doing that for us all, to think whether we've just got interests in common with other people when we make our votes, and also think through whether we actually are doing a vote because of a genuine direct benefit to us. It's a really important vote. It's so difficult. We're so impressed with the colleagues. Whatever they decide, it'll be for the right reasons. And I know that the people who argued yesterday against the plan have prepared the ground, and there are more motions coming forward in November. For instance, I've got one on the residential land availability study. I've put in questions for for House of Keys in a couple of weeks that relate to the transport issues through the Central Valley and to the whole concept of brownfield and greenfield. So everything's it could go either way. And to answer your question, I think the North and West Area Plan will not be approved at this moment.
That was Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas. Next, Treasury Minister Alex Allenson. In the Southern Plan, there were a range of bits of infrastructure that were supposed to have been delivered. The plan's been in place now for 10 years. The infrastructure is still not there.
Yeah, and I, again, my experience of area plans in the last administration was the area plan for the East, and that became quite acrimonious at times. I was expecting this one might be slightly different, but I think this calls into question the whole idea of area plans, and that we really need to plan for the whole island. And hopefully this is the last time we have one of these debates, and we have an all island plan in the future, particularly looking at the strategy. I think you're right that one of the asks from local people and politicians is, okay, you want to build more houses, but where's the infrastructure? Where are the roads? Where's the sewage works? Where are the schools, the GP surgeries to cater for these people at a time when in some areas we know that some of those services are stretched? I mean, government's role there is to look forward in terms of investment in that. I would say that, and I've spoken already about the significant investments that I've seen in Ramsey in the north in terms of the schools, but also in terms of our sewage facilities, the roads, the lands drainage and the improvements that have been put into there. But we know that there are further strategies to look at things like the ambulance station, also look at the fire station there as well, which need to be built up as we build more houses so that some of those response times can be met. And it is very, very important that infrastructure investment goes in. At the same time, we've been doing a lot of work in terms of the overall capital programme and looking to see where that investment goes, trying to make sure that we maintain existing facilities far more rather than just knock them down and replace them. We get the value out of those facilities, but when we do replace them, we try as much as possible to future-proof them. Sometimes that can be expensive, though, and again, it's just trying to balance that budget against the overall other demands that are coming from all parts of the island in terms of extra expenditure. But that's the job of Treasury.
And it would appear that previous Treasury ministers have pulled all the available rabbits out of the hat in terms of providing the surprise positive news that we've all been looking for. Obviously, this is an election year. You've got a budget coming up. Often, it is fair to say, budgets in election year tend to be a little bit more positive than the past. I don't suppose you're going to tell me whether there are any rabbits that you've found in the hat.
No, there aren't any rabbits, and I think it would be disingenuous to say there were. I'm in this for the long term in terms of that long term stability of the finances of the Isle of Man. What I did say in February at the last budget is that one of the key considerations will be to increase personal allowances to make sure that people, particularly working people, have more money in their pockets. Though those were frozen for quite a while, we've seen more and more people creep up into the high tax rate, 21%. We need to make sure that we try to redress that. So that's one of the key priorities for me. But also we looked at constantly updating the insurance thresholds as well. We've had serious reports from education, health, and also the Chief Constable in terms of some of the pressures that they're under, and a real concentration on things like security, safety for our island, but also connectivity. And so a lot of the efforts we're putting in at the moment in Treasury are looking at those key areas that will make a difference to people. Money in their pockets, safer communities, better education, better health services, and making sure they see the results of that investment. That means that I need to be really careful with the various ministers, that the money that they get from the taxpayer, they spend wisely. And that's part of the entire budget process, which I hope will be successful and will be supported in February.
That was Ramsey MHK Alex Allenson. Finally, demographer Paul Crane MLC, who I interviewed before the vote.
Yes, in a sense, we've been touching on aspects of the North and West Area Plan yesterday and much of this morning, because we've been looking at and various points along the way about the infrastructure and Peel and so on that have related to this. I'm concerned about some of those bigger issues. I'm concerned about infrastructure in Peel itself, but also that road into Douglas with the problems already there at Quarterbridge. So I'm concerned about those things. But what I talked about this morning was more general than that. And it may be the way I look at the island as a geographer, but I look at the data that's there, and what I see is almost a regional problem, that the north of the Isle of Man, including most of the parishes that are here in the North and West Area Plan, that is the part of the island that's losing population, you know, whereas the south in many of the local authorities has had some population growth over these last 10 years, so since 2011. The north, I think collectively, there are a total of 11 local authorities, the two towns, Peel and Ramsey, and then 9 parish authorities in there. And the parish authorities have seen a population drop between them of heading on for 400 these last 10 years. And they've got some of the oldest parishes on the island. If you look at the island, median age of the population, just over 46. So that's the age that half the island's population are older than that, half the island younger than that. Here across the north of the island, compared with the island average of 46, Andreas, the median age is 52, Balaf 53, Bride 57 years. Lazare 53, Mackled 54, Michael 52, German 50. Even Ramsey's above the island average at nearly 49. Only Peel and Jerby, for its very specific local reasons, are below the island's median age. So here we've got a distinctly older part of the island that's losing population. Some parishes have lost quite sharply over that period of time. And I'm looking at that and saying there's a sort of regional development problem here. You know, what are we doing to try and support the northern part of the Isle of Man, the rural areas in particular? I accept that's good farmland. I accept I'm not wanting to build all over it, you know, but what are we actually doing in the planning to do with that? And I don't think this plan addresses it at all. You know, it feels as if that just hasn't been recognised. You know, we're not using the range of data that's there in terms of the communities in the north of the island and what's going on, you know. So so I was making that point as a general issue, really, that I'm uncomfortable. I still don't know. You've said that the final outcome's not coming. I'm not sure, even at this stage, which way I'm going to vote on this. You know, I'm uncomfortable with it. I'm uncomfortable when I see the bulk of the local authorities opposing it, although I know that in Mackled, Garth, they're quite keen for this to progress, because Mackled have been looking for how they can grow the population, rejuvenate a bit for some years now. And I think Ramsey's fairly happy with this, and Peel less so. But then Peel, in that period between 2011 and 2021, Peel grew by 50%, you know, in the first 5 years of that, they grew by 35-36%, and that's an enormous amount of growth to go in. They've seen in Peel the wave of children from new housing go through the primary school, which must have peaked in the late 2010s, and these last few years has fallen. I think they've lost about 18% of the school size, although there are other issues too, because where we've got across the island increased additional education needs of students, that takes off some of the capacity of some of these schools, you know. So I'm aware of that. Some of these issues are complex. But at the secondary school in Peel, they're just seeing this wave coming through from the previous house building before 2010. They're seeing that wave come through now. So they're at a peak at the moment, and they've risen these last 4 or 5 years with numbers added on. So when you build, when you allocate land and build large numbers of houses, it impacts on each of the services differently. So the schools get a wave. You know, when you get the new houses, they attract a younger demographic, and that results in families, and you see that go through as a wave.
And presumably, one of the ways in which you encourage the population to be younger is to provide more employment opportunities in the areas where age is getting old, people are getting older. Well, hopefully most people are getting older anyway, but the average age is increasing. And other things, presumably, you would look for are things that would be provide entertainment for younger people.
Yes, absolutely. In terms of the jobs, the island prides itself and indeed markets itself on the short commuter journeys here. You know, this is a real boon. You know, people who've come over from London, where they've been used to travelling an hour and a half or more each day into work and back, you know, they come to the Isle of Man and get to work and back in 20 minutes or something, you know. That's part of our strength. But if we build the houses in the West and only have the jobs in the East, that's a problem. So this needs to be a whole community development. You know, what are the jobs that are going to be there in Peel? I know in recent years we had the excellent example of Tice Llewellyn moving out. So this is Department of DEFA and education now as well, both in the building out there. And that's a very significant employer in the western part of the island, not in Peel, but out in the west. And that sense of distributing the employment, that's so important. But that would be looking at whole communities rather than fields for houses.
That was MLC Paul Crane. So what do you think? With no plan B, is Tynwald playing high-stakes poker with the planning system? Has government got this wrong? Each of the area plans has been opposed by MHKs for the area being considered, so something is clearly not working. Let me know what you think by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayo. Thanks for listening.